asked for the moon and got it, so I'm excited.
Come on, Cheryl.
I know, I know.
Don't set us up.
So our two speakers today, starting with Maureen. Maureen has over 40 years of experience in hospitals and in research and teaching. She has a WIC background. She has her MPH from UC Berkeley, and one of her first jobs after obtaining her MPH was working for WIC in the Los Angeles area. And her first public work was a 1984 article in JDA related to dietitians as lactation counselors. So she has done a fellowship in ethics, and I can't let this go by that just the rave reviews that you have received from the dietetic program and all the work that you have done,
that
you have
that
been
window.
A valuable leader in training dietitians,
okay, so they that, down here.
Especially in the area of nutrition care process, and
sorry.
The nutrition focused physical exams. You brought that
and then
to the program.
Find your device
as
over
well
here.
As your specialty
you.
Work in
there
renal dietetics. And is it true that in your spare time you still enjoy quilting and being in part
not
of the choir?
Quilting later, lately, but yes.
That's a PDF this time. Mm-hmm. Do you want the
no, I don't want the PDF. I don't have my glasses.
Welcome, Maureen.
That's my problem.
In addition to
pardon
Maureen,
me.
We've got Jesse. And Jesse is a past president of the what used
Hi.
To be called the American Dietetic Association and now the Academy.
Can you get to... Shoot. I brought the PDF. That's what you're going to get, guys. Sorry.
That's fine. That's
okay.
Totally fine. And I can advance it as you need
thanks.
It.
Thanks. I can advance it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
In addition, I just wanted to mention that Jesse, as Jesse's service as... has an added recognition that I just really tickled me, that your service as president of the Academy, that then ADA, was recognized by Representative Kurt Schrader, and you were entered into the congressional record on May 18th in 2010. You don't know
really?
This?
I don't yeah. know that. I actually know Kurt because he's the father of a kid that played with my youngest son. In
that's
Denver,
why
so.
He would add this part.
That's right.
So what was interesting is that Kurt added a small portion of the history noted in this is in the congressional record. This is, I know. My state of Oregon has its share of remarkable people, one of whom I wish to recognize today is a constituent of mine, Jesse Pavlinek, a registered dietitian from Oregon City. She and her husband, Randy, and their two sons live on a small family berry farm, an experience which has given her a lifelong commitment to a reliable, sustainable, and safe food supply for the health of our nation.
I'll have to give him more money.
Welcome, Jesse Emory. So, do you want to drive? Or?
I can drive,
okay.
I think. I'm going to stand for half a minute. Hey, Sue.
How you doing?
There are a few people around here I know.
So, Sue Woodbury and Robin Stanton just opened.
So, the person I know the longest is Vernita, because we lived in the same co-op in Oregon State. Yeah, oh my God, yes. Now, I'm much older than she is, but...
Inspiration to me.
Yeah, right. Anyway, sorry. Well, that was just blew me away. Sorry, I'm just... So thank you for the invitation. I do want to say exactly what Cheryl said about Maureen. She is the expert on ethics, okay? She did an ethics fellowship, and she also is the expert on WIC. You get me because... at the last Oregon Dietetic Association meeting, Academy of whatever we're called now. And then we, Sonia Cotter, Cheryl Biddle, and I did a little spiel about ethics. And then we've done it up in Pendleton, too. I hope we've tailored the presentation to WIC. And the other thing is, this is not us talking. This is us talking about it, okay? Because we're going to present four cases. I sent the PDF with the cases there. But it really is to get us talking about ethics, okay? I'm going to start, and then Maureen's going to continue, and I'm going to drive, I hope. So I do apologize. I just did the PDF. So the resources you also have, they were sent out by Cheryl. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and the Commission on Dietetic Registration Code of Ethics. Now, why is that important? Why are they twofold? This is where you get to talk. Right, registered. I heard somebody say it very quietly. So not everybody is a member, and that's okay. But we're all, if you're a dietitian, you're registered nationally. So the code of ethic applies for whether you're a registered dietitian, registered dietetic technician, and or a member of the academy, because there are several members of the academy that aren't registered dietitians, most of which are in academia and other places, maybe even amongst you all. And then you also have a ethics resources and references, so hopefully that will help you. I will apologize, I have a cold, so I sound like I'm in a fog, and I am. So, ethics. What is ethics and what is it not?
When you hear you're going to have a presentation about ethics, what do you think we'll be talking about? For me, you know, when I went through an ethics fellowship at OHSU in that clinical setting, it was end of life. You know, that's what I thought I would be talking about, but I have a feeling that your perspective is much broader than that.
Maureen didn't live on the... She did come from a farm, but she didn't live on the 40-acre berry farm that I can project across when the kids are throwing. So,
sorry.
We're going to... Why don't you...
Oh, I'm good. Okay. I'm good. I'll just project a little better.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Because we lived... Maureen is now retired. We lived at Oregon Health and Science University. So, end-of-life ethics is probably the biggest thing. But it is not what ethics is really all about. Ethics are influenced by all of our values, what we, you know, grew up with, our experiences over the last many years. One of the central principles of ethics is reversibility and universality, I can't say that word, which just means, would you want somebody to do this to you, and would you want everyone to do this? So it really is kind of, you know, the moral context that we have. And ethics is not about getting caught or placing blame. It is not. And I think that's what the scary part when we start talking about ethics is, oh my God, I'm going to be in some ethical dilemma and get myself fired. Right? Whether it's HIPAA, whether it's policy, whether it's interactions, because we all interact with people, it's not about that. It really is to be... you know, standards of behavior, and sometimes it is even defined as your conscience. So the Academy of Code of Ethics, and this should say Academy and CDR Code of Ethics, we were actually one of the first professions to adopt a code. It was in 1982, so that was quite a while ago, and some of us have been practicing that long. Right, Sue? Now most organizations and professions certainly have a code of ethics, right? You guys have one, we have one, we have it for our profession. The fourth version was published in 2009, and there's a copy, I see Karen printed it off. We provided that in case you didn't have a copy. And there are 19 principles, and they are our responsibilities as a professional to the public, to our clients, to the profession, and colleagues and other professionals. I talk to interns sometimes about the Code of Ethics. I haven't done it in a couple of years. Somebody else is doing it. But it really is one of those documents that I don't think we spend enough time looking at. You know? That's what we're going to try and do and pull in some of those standards into some real-life situations. I need to say this out loud. What I might have put in as far as what the one of the 19 principles may be my thoughts about it. And they're not. It's not right or wrong. It's just points of conversation.
And the other thing I'll say is that it really, 19 principles sounds like a lot to wrap your hands around or your brain around. But going back to what Jesse said, reversibility and universality, you know, go back to those two basic questions, you can answer a lot of ethical dilemmas as well. And there's rarely, you know, a right answer when you are looking at these situations. So just, you know, bear that in mind too.
The other, now that Maureen said that, the other piece I didn't put in this is a very nice model that she brought to our dietitians from her fellowship, which was a four-square decision kind of model, which had to do with, can you name them? I can't off the top of my...
The basic principles, the patient, medical history in
our case, right.
Patient preferences, what you know about what the individual wants or what their family wants, extenuating circumstances, what kind of resources are available to the family and to the community, and then personal autonomy. So just considering those four categories helps in a medical model. I think in the community setting, I really do like the universality and the reversibility concept. Would you like somebody else to do that to you? And does this apply to all people? I think is helpful.
But I do like that model that she spoke of, and if I had been sharper, I would have brought it and I can send it to you, Cheryl, if you'd like. Because it does, some of the cases we're going to bring up is really, that we're bringing up, are people trying to impose their values on a client or a family versus listening to what they want to sometimes, okay? So it might be a cool model, minus some of the medical stuff, but you guys deal with medical stuff too? So, any questions about where we're going, or can we jump into the cases? That? Yes, ma'am.
When you say reversibility, can you say more how that term is?
So the it means, would I like somebody to do that to me?
Oh,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
We're not trying to be complex.
Yeah, we aren't. It's if we want to make it more biblical, do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. That's really kind of what I think it means, you know?
And then universality just means, does it apply to everybody? Yeah. You know, can you apply it across the board?
Right. And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. So, the first case is, you have been on Facebook almost since the beginning. At first, your friends were personal friends and family members. Over time, you're friended many of your professional colleagues. Now your posts are a mix of personal and professional messages. In 2013, the Academy and CDR suggested that you have an account for personal friends and family members and a separate account for professional colleagues. Yet, in 2015, Facebook began prohibiting multiple personal accounts. What are you going to do? What's the ethical dilemma that you have? We're going to go to the next slide because you're going to get some possible responses. Some silly, some will work. So, just because I don't have good slides, I'll read them. It would be a nightmare to me to set up another account and move one set of friends to it. Only my friends can see what I post on Facebook, so I post whatever I want there. I'll set up a new friends list within my current account for colleagues only. And I choose to only post content that is appropriate for both my friends and colleagues to see. You like number four because?
The most realistic for me.
Yeah, okay. Any other people's thoughts? There's a couple of millennials in here. Let's see.
I think it's the most realistic and it's the one that creates the least risk. I think it goes along with what I told my children: whatever's on the internet is on there forever. Mm-hmm.
And so you really don't want to put anything on there. If you really want to save something, just keep that. Should keep it clean. As a professional, anybody can see your Facebook. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it sort of depend, though, on the... Well, I'm just thinking about it. When it says you've befriended professional colleagues, you know, in terms of on Facebook. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, Bernita and I are professional colleagues, but we're also friends. So does that mean that she wouldn't see the stuff that says a friend? Or are you talking about professional colleagues like other RDs that you're looking out for business reasons or what?
It's not a business Facebook account. If that's your personal Facebook account, even though you're friends, you still work together, and that there could be conflict there. So I think it's that.
But that gets back to then maybe you need to pick one of the other options.
I think that you need to make that choice beforehand and not. There are people that make the choice not to friend colleagues, even if they are. Even if they are friends in person, they make that professional choice. I'm not going to friend people that I'm co-workers with.
But to me, that's exactly what they're talking about on that it depends, you know, because that would be another option would be to say, keep your professional and your personal really separate, however you do that.
And I think that's an option. I also think for me personally, I make it so that anybody could see my Facebook account and I wouldn't have problems.
I think it depends on you. If you want to post things that might be inappropriate, don't be friends with your colleagues.
And it's also like, what is inappropriate? I mean, in our political climate, for instance, there's a lot of political stuff that could get very heated that at one point people wouldn't have thought was not professional or whatever, too. So it's like, how do you decide what's professional?
But there's also cases of people losing their jobs because it got leaked.
Yep.
And it wasn't related to, it wasn't somebody that they knew or they were even friends with, but they made a post, somebody screenshotted it, they get sent it to the news. So I think that's why I kind of like to tell my friends, if your spouse, your future spouse, your children, your future children wouldn't see it, you shouldn't put it on the internet. Because even if it's your personal, you still are a professional individual.
Is there a question?
What if somebody else puts something on and tags you?
Then you untag it.
You can take it off.
Yeah, you can. So, just because we've got a couple more. This is really rich discussion, and my God, you have to decide for yourself. I personally do not friend anybody that I supervise. Yeah. I do not. And I just won't, because I think that's dangerous. I certainly wouldn't friend anybody that I had a professional relationship as a dietitian to a patient either. But you have to think about it. And when I talk to Dietech interns about it, OHSU won't let me go out on Facebook and look at their postings when I'm interviewing them, but many places do. And I don't know what the state of Oregon's HR rules are, but, there's... Yep. Everybody can see them. That's the rule. So you have to make sure that everything is on the up and up.
And that's been legally supported from an HR standpoint that it's fair game. If it's out there on
the
internet, it's fair game.
Yeah, in many institutions.
HR to look at.
And I'm curious, Jesse, I hadn't been part of your previous discussions. It would seem to me that this really is like I'm one of the older people in the room, and there would be really different input or perspectives based on our ages. I remember how amusing it was when Sonia went on Facebook a few years ago when she was running for president. And I thought, isn't this cute? And now she's more proficient at it than I am, and she's probably one of the few professionals that I'm a friend with, and it goes back to that time.
But she had somebody that was doing most of those postings for it. It was a strategy to get her elected.
How does she weigh in on this?
She would say professional posting and be very careful. Yeah, but she posts stuff about her family.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we
all
travel.
Know where she's been traveling.
Yeah, she. Maureen goes, well, I see you and Son, you were out and you had dinner in some place, and yeah, she posts stuff. I just think you have to be aware that you could be called. Somebody might think of it as being unethical. So you have to be aware of it. So the principles that tie into that document that you have talk about that the Dietetics practitioner supports and promotes high standards of professional practice, that they do not engage in false or misleading practices or communications. And that can be a challenge. You guys were talking about what was the evidence based for giving out a certain formula. It was because mom said. We have different, almost 100,000 credentialed practitioners. different ideas about what is evidence and non-evidence, too. The whole issue of organic formulas, et cetera, we both have in common, because we're trying to, what are we really going to do these or not? But whether or not the data is there, we have to consider it. We don't want to assume a lifelong responsibility and accountability for personal competence in practice. So you want to make sure that that's is in there. And alert to occurrences of real or potential conflict of interests. And that's probably the biggest thing, at least in my role. I am very cautious about social media. If I'm on even a listserv, it's a rare occasion that I'll respond to all. I'll respond to the person asking the question, because unfortunately I've been quoted without knowing or forwarded kind of stuff. And that's all the risks I had, because I, a few years ago had some national attention. And that stigma, and I'll use it that way, of being a former Academy president is still there. Okay? It still comes back going, oh, you said this back in 2009. Yeah, I did. Thanks. Okay. You also have to understand the legal risks. HR is a good one. Other thing is just, and doesn't go away. And there's a media checklist if you're out there doing some media stuff that you might want to look at, because there's some ethical stuff there. And then, want to maybe consider adopting some disclosure guidelines for your own personal use.
So the next question is one of several that came to us through Cheryl to make this presentation that would be more similar to things you've encountered in practice. This is a dietitian who is overheard offering her opinion about organic versus conventional produce during a WIC counseling session. And you're overhearing this colleague encouraging the use of organic produce despite the WIC participant talking about how it's not available, more expensive. And then as the conversation continues, the dietitian suggests to the client that purchasing smaller amounts of produce will ensure that the organic varieties can be obtained within the family budget. So there's some responses that we came up with, and I think Jesse came up with these, just kind of trying to
think. If they're really serious, I'm sorry.
So just take a look at those. Think about the situation, and then the conversation will start. So if you've had a chance to read them, any thoughts or any comments about the situation for these responses? Do you think you're going to interrupt your colleague in her counseling session? Probably not.
That would be my style. but it's wrong, and that's why I put it in there, because I couldn't keep my mouth shut. Sorry.
That's that reversibility.
That's right.
There you go.
But I like number three.
Number three, remind your colleague that the goal of more fruits and vegetables is what counts, not the method of production.
Well, I think it's
you
need to go beyond it, because their heart's in the right place, but they're not being very participant-centered, and they're also not taking into consideration the participants' situation. So this might be a mom that really wants to buy organic, and they can't. So,
I think another way too would be an RD meeting. Bring it up as a group discussion.
Bring it up as a group
discussion. Yeah. Confronting, but kind of having an RD discussion about that topic. My thought on both two and three, so you're responding to this person, and she has deeply held beliefs about organic versus conventional, so number two and number three really aren't going to change her mind or her decision. So, I guess, what's that? Right, so I guess question is, you know, maybe not a question. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. So how would you address, you know, it's like her belief system, and she obviously is you know, working with clients and putting that forward, and she may continue to do that. So, you know, just dealing with that.
So Robin's thought is that if you, this is someone who feels strongly enough to include this in her counseling session with these patients, you're not likely to change her mind with your comments about WIC goals. But item number two, and so there, the certainly could combine those two. There certainly is literature about conventional versus organic growth and the nutritional value of those. Cost-benefit analyses. So there's literature out there, you know, to look at. But I think a combination of two and three. Nobody went for report your colleague to their supervisor.
Well, you know, I don't think it's really her beliefs that are at issue here. It's the fact that she, I think that what Tiari was responding to is that she didn't hear the concerns of her participants and was not able to adapt her recommendations based on the participants' needs. And I think the universality would be that we would want, that we all have our own beliefs, but we have to work within the environment that we are find ourselves. And so in this case, this my colleague, I think I would want to encourage just a really being able to listen to the concerns and adjusting my recommendations
rather than necessarily
of what my personal belief was, adjusting it so that it would be that I could find a win-win situation.
Yeah. So rather than necessarily suggesting this is wrong and this is right,
absolutely no.
Say this is what the where the client is, and let's go there.
Uh-huh. That's what I think. It's not the belief that's her belief that's the problem. It's the way. In my opinion, it was more the way that it was being really forcefully delivered to a participant who was not, that wasn't it necessary for that encounter.
Maureen, can I interject?
Certainly.
For those on the phone, if you want to join the conversation, we hope you can. And if you have a hard time hearing or you want a question to be asked that you would rather type in, please do that because we do have Diane monitoring that. So we want to make sure that you're able to hear and also be able to give input.
So if we look at the principles that came up in this one, So item or principle number two was also in the first case study having a high standard of profession and practice, professional practice. Item number three, the health, safety, and welfare of the patient at all times, keeping that in mind. So kind of being patient focused. Principle number six is treating your clients with respect and with objectivity and respect. No false or misleading information. And using item 12, using evidence-based information. And then 13, giving reliable and substantiated information without bias. So those are things to think about, and they all do kind of play a role and might help in a discussion of that if it were a case that came up to the front. Any other thoughts about that case before we go on to another one? Or thoughts about the discussion as a whole?
Mary Kay on the phone, is there an opportunity?
We're listening. We hear you.
Yeah, okay. One of the things that I'm struck by this particular conversation is that a lot of folks who are who feel very strongly about organic versus conventional, it's not from the nutrition perspective that they're feeling strongly like that organic produce, well, some folks do think that organic produce has more nutrients than conventional, but it's more from the ecological, you know, sustainability kind of approach. Or or just to that notion of non-using chemicals or whatever, there's sort of other reasons that aren't nutrition. So I think it's useful to have a conversation with a colleague about, you know, there might be reasons that you feel strongly about, you know, organic versus conventional, or, you know, or there's environmental concerns. And so addressing that or acknowledging that there might be reasons that a person would choose that, but then calling attention to the situation, which other folks have already brought up about the research, et cetera. But I think sometimes it's helpful to acknowledge why someone might feel strongly one way or another, but also point out how they might not be in the interest of the client.
Right, and I think Vernita had that approach kind of with wanting to understand where the dietitian was coming from, but also putting the patient's interests at the top. So, thank you. Yeah, I agree. Definitely there's more than a nutrition concern. It could be environmental. It could be other issues.
I think Carrie had a discussion.
Yeah, or a question. I'm just really grateful that our food package gives us a choice, you know, for clients to have a choice of choosing to buy our food or not. But also, it's going to be kind of varied because I don't overhear my colleagues talking about nutrition. I don't know what they say. And so I think, you know, from a managerial perspective, it'd be really interesting to know what type of biases we all have. Because I'm sure I have my own biases that I'm not even aware of.
Mm-hmm.
That I interject when I'm talking.
So Carrie's comment, if you didn't hear it on the phone, is simply that we don't really know what our colleagues are saying to our clients, and it would be an interesting point of discussion at a meeting like this, what, for lack of a better word, what personal biases might be creeping into the counseling that we do with our patients.
Just a follow-up to that, when you have the whole idea of conflict of interest is that you can declare a conflict in like a meeting like this, but we all, I totally agree with you, Carrie, we all come with our own biases. What we have to do is when we're dealing with clients or organizations, you have to consider that you recognize those biases, but, you know, what are you trying to provide and what is needed by that client?
Well, it's like my brother's a lentil farmer. Mm-hmm. I'm always pushing lentils.
The next one, isn't it?
It is the next one, yeah. Hopefully not to his farm only. That's fine. Yeah.
I was thinking about, you already know that you have this bias about organic. I think that the conversation that I would like to see would be about the local resources that are actually on par with the conventionally grown fruits and vegetables. So in many communities, people are very skilled about finding good deals, mm-hmm. organic or not. And I think it has to be skewed in that direction with this person who feels that it's important, but that person is also well prepared so they can give tangible information about where to find this at the same price mm-hmm. as other fruits and vegetables, because that's one of the barriers that families often have, is that they do not know where to find this stuff at the deals that a few of our clients are very good at finding. And so I think as a dietitian, you get that information from clients, and you have to sort of that gap.
So treating the client with respect,
yes,
and with objective
and
information.
And be uh-huh. more prepared in what's uh-huh. available to you mm-hmm. in your community will make mm-hmm. that person more accepting towards the, wow, I can't afford this. Mm-hmm. This is just going to be now a personal choice, not a financial choice. Mm-hmm. Because there's stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. So we'll go on to question 3. And this is a dietitian who's wearing more than one hat. Part-time WIC dietitian, also consulting part-time with worksite wellness programs. Weight management guidance has become a part of her practice. And she's interested in completing the CDR weight management certification, but she can't afford it. And has no support from her employer. Surprise, surprise. A friend who represents the company that makes and sells weight loss products suggests that the firm would fund her enrollment fees and travel expenses to the course in exchange for her meeting with their team to learn more about their products. Currently, she does not endorse any products and is generally against such weight loss products. So
I remember thinking about I remember thinking about infant formulas this way in the late 70s, you know, formula versus breastfeeding, you know, and it was difficult for me to imagine ever, you know, having a relationship with a formula company. So your response is, and you can take a look at those, and then we'll have a discussion again.
You can ask them to Dr. Min.
And if you want to type in your choice of the four responses, those of you who are on the phone, please do that. So accept the offer and listen to information by the vendor. Number two, decline financial assistance and decline meeting with the vendor. Number three, apply for a district or state education grant for funding. And number four, tell your worksite wellness program of the offer and see if you can get them to pay for it.
Good answer.
Thoughts?
Oh, number two.
You're hearing.
They haven't do anything with the company.
So there's lots of votes for declining the financial assistance and decline meeting with a vendor.
Hey, Maureen, I, what you were saying about the formula company was very telling, because just in the past decade, I remember going to a meeting at a hospital, not any hospital you're affiliated with, and there was food brought in and a birthday cake brought in by the formula company for the dietitians. And it's it was very cozy. It was really cozy. And so you can see where it can get a little gray in terms of how we...
Well, have a very good gatekeeper at our
I'm such a stickler. But it wasn't until a few years ago that we could have had food. I think you have a... sorry to interrupt, but I think you have a choice. You either talk to none of them or you talk to all of them. Okay? So I tend to... allow them to bring in, everybody can bring in information, but no food, no pens, no Christmas goodies, no nothing. But, yeah.
And then they have to subject themselves to Jesse's questions.
Help us.
She grills them about the products.
I do. That's true.
Very different situation than what's
going on. Yeah. So let's come back to this one. Any thoughts? Any further thoughts?
Well, I'll chip in here, and I think it's because I think as a profession of women, we're a little more timid. I don't see anything wrong with number four.
I don't either.
If you're an employer and you believe that there's a value to go forward and ask, if they may say no, but I think that we tend to be very timid and don't ask. If you can make a good business case to the worksite wellness program that you work for, that your certification, which is a credit, you know, you aren't going to get bariatric surgery certification or the like, you know, it's a valid certification. I think we need to consider that and not be put off by those options. It doesn't mean it works, but we shouldn't say no, there's an ethical dilemma.
Or kind of sell it to your, whoever can help you. Because I did this training, and I did it, the one they're talking about here, and I think kind of came up with a compromise. Like, I paid my tuition, right, but I got paid my salary while there, you know?
So for those of you on the phone, if you didn't hear that, the thought is regarding number four, that we really do need to speak up for ourselves, and we bring value to our workplace, and they should support us in our continuing education needs. So that's not off the table and not meant to be off the table. I think this is one of the case studies where we have multiple options that are all good, or all part of the whole. You know, they all make a one good response.
I've used this for other divisions at OHSU. Sorry, we don't have any travel money in my department, but you know, pediatrics do, and I've gotten them to pay for things for something that was important for them. So, you know, Sue's MBA is coming through there. My master's in healthcare management is coming through there. You know, you try to do what you can do, because there are resources that are still ethical to go after, and I agree with you. So, Yeah, the responses all are, there's not one right answer. So I purposely put that one in thinking of what I really do anyway.
So if we want to go to the next slide and just think about what that case study involved, standard one, honesty, integrity, and fairness. Number two, we've talked about before in both of the other case studies. Number four, complying with laws and regulations related to ethical obligations. 15, alert to real or potential conflicts of interest, taking appropriate action. And number 18, does not invite, accept, or offer gifts. And I actually thought, as I looked at the things, there were a couple of others that I might have added. Item 5, provide services with objectivity. And 13, presenting information without bias. And there was a paper that was on the list of resources that you got that had a lot of links on it. And this one was on enteral and infant formulas. And I liked something that that paper said. What did it say? Consider available research evidence and the patient's needs and cost, availability and efficacy, the reliability, and avoid the four F's of ethical failure: familiarity, friendship, favors, and finances. So,
I like that.
Yeah.
Say those again.
the four F's of ethical failure: familiarity, friendship, favors, and finances. And that was from the paper that's on the list of resources, a paper on enteral and infant formula.
I'll get that certificate.
Terry said another F was food.
Food, yeah. Any other discussion?
Yeah, I haven't really finished the slide, have
I? No, well, it's okay.
Institutional or workplace policy about this that you know of?
The state has very clear policies about you can't accept gifts from outside. You have to put them into a pot. They have all kinds of rules.
And we certainly at OHSU have policies about conflict of interest and accepting gifts and an annual statement to...
Sign your life away.
Yeah.
And I think Vernita brought this up already. I like the real versus suspicion of conflict of interest. It doesn't matter if it's real or not. It's the perception. And we are all judged by that perception, right? We are.
Your intention may be totally honorable and above board, but if there's any possibility that it could be perceived otherwise, it will happen. So just not putting yourself into that position is I think, a real important ethical decision.
We even do that with stuff like the statewide meeting and who we invite and who can come and that kind of stuff, because we have the same deal of you don't want to have the ghost of an implication that it's... there's a bias there.
Tough line to hold to stay on, though, sometimes. Okay. So, question 4.
This is Carrie's.
Yeah, or it was mine. It was mine a few years ago. Sorry. I was bringing in strawberries to people because they wanted me to bring them in and to sell. And it was people in my workplace. But yeah, a WIC dietitian's family owns a farm that accepts WIC checks through the Farm Direct Nutrition Program. And she starts handing out flyers about their family farm. What's the problem here?
The four F's.
The four F's, yeah, I like that.
The four F's.
Yeah. So, your response might be, I could only think of three of them here. I was running out of steam.
Reminder calling all the farms equally.
We're not even supposed to promote individual stores. So much less to send it to your own farm and excuse me, the heat and TV. So I need to do that first.
No. Do you feel like we need to go to the report the information to Tiari? Possibly.
Maybe it's a reminder, and then if it happens again, then yeah. I mean, this possibly the first time, but it definitely, if it happens again, that's unacceptable behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the code of ethics that we have OHSU, I had to review them for another, you know, I'm a manager of 54 people, so I had to look up something today not related to this. It really says if you know of something that's wrong, if you're comfortable with talking to your colleague about it, you should try to do that first. This is pretty egregious, particularly if they've signed off all the policies. I mean, you know, whether or not you have, if you think they've just forgotten or if it's blatant.
They're being nice, Jesse.
Yeah.
Here's
a strawberry. That's right.
Come stop by.
A conversation is always nice, but, you know, it depends on where you're at as far as if this has happened before, if you said something before. I mean, this is pretty serious, right? Person should... It endangers the integrity of your whole organization. And many people don't think about that, but it really reflects poorly. And there you go, there's pot shots about WIC from top to bottom, right? Pot shots about healthcare, et cetera. So we have to protect our profession and our organization. So it all depends on where it's at. 3 might be right. So what did I decide? It had to be something about your own personal gain, obviously. Is that what...
the
conflict of interest. So 15 and 18. Sorry, I lost my place. Would be...
Is it there?
Conflict of interest, real or potential.
Thank you. I don't have that one. Conflict of interest, real or potential, or personal gain. Personal gain is a big one. So if somehow what you're portraying or giving out lines your pockets in any way, it's obviously, fairly obviously, that it's not ethical. And there are federal regulations for preferential treatment of vendors and farmers, as you know. We want to encourage, I like the idea, yes, we have a whole flyer about things within the county. Every county puts out UPIC or farmers market or any of that kind of stuff.
Is it also unethical to refer people to a specific farmers market that's maybe closer by than another one?
So what do you guys think? I have an opinion that maybe is not...
Oh, just referring one farmer's market.
Because
I've been on the board, you actually benefit
when
you get more business. So,
yeah, booked on the board.
Yeah. Well, what does that mean that if we're asking them to come to our clinic? How do you do that with? I mean, because we were talking about that earlier. Asking the farmers to come. Would that be that you'd have to ask all the farmers? An open invitation to all the farmers?
I think in that case you don't want to direct them to it. It's you're informing them. You know, these are all of the clinics. This one seems to be closest to you, but you can use them all of right. This place. I mean, it's information. It's not a recommendation or an encouragement. It's here is where they are and here's where they're located. Right. You